Okay, so two topics today, adultery and pornography. First, why is adultery wrong? Point A, because God says so. You shall not commit adultery. If we seek to understand a little more deeply what is involved with the sin of adultery, point B, it wrongly pictures unfaithfulness in the relationship between God and his people, because marriage is a picture of the relationship between Christ and his church. Ephesians 5:31 to 32. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is a great mystery, says Paul, and I take it to mean Christ and the church. So marriage is a picture of Christ and the church. And therefore, adultery, if the husband is unfaithful, it pictures Christ being unfaithful to his people and abandoning them. It pictures Christ not keeping his covenant with them. And it pictures Christ being unfaithful to a covenant, just like Malachi 2:14 says, adultery is being unfaithful to a covenant promise. So that's an awful picture that God does not want us to portray. Or if the wife commits adultery, then it pictures the church going and following other gods and being unfaithful to Christ. So it destroys that beautiful picture of the relationship between Christ and the church. Point C, adultery wrongly intrudes another person into the one flesh relationship of marriage. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. But adultery interferes with that relationship in marriage and wrongfully intrudes another person. And adultery destroys trust within a marriage, because it's a most serious violation of the marriage promise. And maybe you are aware of, among friends or family members or extended family members, someone who's been involved in a situation of adultery, or maybe you've counseled or talked with people who have been involved in a situation of adultery. Sometimes the marriage can be repaired after that, but it's never the same, because that's been such a deep, deep betrayal and a sense of loss of trust. And so it destroys trust within a marriage, which can only be built over a long period of time. Even if the person who hasn't committed adultery says, well, I forgive my spouse, I want the marriage to continue. Forgiveness is one thing, but building trust is another thing. And trust is only built very slowly and over a long period of time. And it can't be compelled, it can't be demanded, it can't be forced. Trust is something that happens after you've come to see a person as trustworthy, and adultery destroys that. Adultery also often leads to children being born without two parents to raise them, which is a great difficulty for the children, or it leads to abortion to end an unwanted pregnancy. Well, the Bible, especially in the book of Proverbs, when it talks about adultery, it says it frequently destroys a person's life. Destroys a person's life. So I'm going to read a passage from Proverbs 5, and then one from Proverbs 6, and then one from Proverbs 7. These are words of counsel, especially from a father to a son, but they're applicable to all of us to listen to. Proverbs 5, 3 and following. For the lips of a forbidden woman, and when we did the ESV translation, there's an expression here, it actually literally is foreign woman, but it means someone that you're not married to. And we thought foreign woman wouldn't quite do it, and most translations don't do that. So we said forbidden. It's someone who's foreign to your marriage commitment. It's someone that is forbidden to you by God's law. The lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. That is, she sounds so persuasive. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Wormwood is a bitter-tasting extract from a plant that grows in the Middle East. Sharp as a two-edged sword, so painful, harmful. Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her. Don't just get into extended conversations with her. Don't develop a friendship. Keep your way far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Don't kind of accidentally wander by where you'll know you'll see her. Don't go near. Don't be tempted. Lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless. Lest strangers take the fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And at the end of your life you groan when your flesh and body are consumed and you say, how I hated discipline and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. So that's Proverbs 5. Proverbs 6, another striking image. Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? It's like, you know, reaching into the barbecue grill, taking out a whole handful of charcoal, hot burning charcoal embers, and carrying them next to your chest. Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is he who goes in to his neighbor's wife. None who touches her will go unpunished. He who commits adultery lacks sense. He who does it destroys himself. He will get wounds and dishonor, and his disgrace will not be wiped away. Now look, we live in an age that has very low moral standards with regard to human sexual conduct. But even in our society, with the low standards we have, when someone commits adultery, it just is immensely destructive to the person. I made a list a little later on. Oh, yeah, I'll skip down to G just for a minute. Look at the recent stories about David Petraeus, decorated general, honored general in the U.S. Army, and then the head of the CIA, committed adultery, career ruined. You can't trust him. If you can't trust him to be faithful in his marriage, how in the world can you trust him to keep our nation's secrets as head of the CIA? Trust was destroyed. His life was ruined, his professional life. Mark Sanford was Republican governor of South Carolina, married 4 children, mentioned as a possible presidential candidate for the GOP, then met some woman and ran off to Argentina to be with her and lied about it. And of course his career was just, now I don't quite understand how this comes about. He's running for Congress again in South Carolina, and maybe in a very Republican district he'll beat the other candidates. I don't know, but my goodness, his wife divorced him, and rightly so, and his life was presidential ambitions and future political ambitions were largely destroyed. John Edwards. You seen John Edwards recently?
No.
Who? Yeah. Former Democratic candidate for president in the primaries and a very successful trial lawyer, but again committed adultery. Mark Souter, tragic story. Indiana congressman, very conservative, upheld family values, got involved with a staff member in his congressional staff. There's an article in World Magazine that I printed out, Lessons from a Broken Man. Eliot Spitzer, Democratic governor of New York. I tried to put a couple Democrats, a couple Republicans in the list. Just kind of for equal representation. And just to say, it doesn't confine itself to one political party. Jim?
What about women on the list?
What about women on the list? I can't off the top of my head think of high-profile women who have destroyed their careers this way, but I'm sure there are some. So.
Hosea 4:14, it's a man's fault.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that. Okay. Okay, so, but sadly also many pastors. And I'm sorry, I was within the last 2 weeks, I saw a little headline in a newspaper and didn't tear it out. There was a pastor of a 15,000 member church in Indiana.
Jack Sharp.
Who is it?
Jack Sharp.
Jack Sharp?
S-C-H-A-A-P.
Jack Sharp. Okay. And was convicted. I mean, that's a church almost three times the size of Scottsdale Bible, convicted of, go ahead.
He had a church of 15,000 members, and he was convicted of a relationship with a 15-year-old girl that was counseling with him, and it was a flagrant violation.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And he's in his 50s, and the newspaper article that I read that I wish I'd torn out, he was just sentenced to 15 years in prison.
I know he was sentenced. I don't recall how many years.
I think it was 15 years. But, okay, now, and at the end of your life you groan when your flesh and body are consumed. I'm at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. My goodness. Pastor of a church three times the size of Scottsdale Bible, and now he's going to spend his next 10 or 15 years in prison. Verse 32 of Proverbs 6. He who commits adultery lacks sense. He who does it destroys himself. He will get wounds and dishonor, and his disgrace will not be wiped away. Well, think of those men. His disgrace will not be wiped away. Proverbs 7, 21 to 23. Again, talking about an immoral woman trying to seduce a man with much seductive speech. She persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. All at once, he follows her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a stag is caught fast till an arrow pierces its liver. As a bird rushes into a snare, he does not know that it will cost him his life. These are very strong warnings. Very strong warnings. And I just put here, parents should give warnings like this to their children. Maybe some of you are aware of situations where maybe even your children or nieces or nephews or someone seemed to have everything going, the life was going great, and then adultery came along and destroyed the marriage and destroyed the path of life that looked like it was experiencing such blessing. So how does adultery happen? It often begins with a quote-unquote innocent friendship. I don't know the details of all of those stories that I have below, but John Edwards, it was, I think, a photographer or something, came on his staff. David Petraeus, it was a woman that was doing a biographical study of him and had a lot of interviews and then started going jogging with him because she was athletic and innocent quote-unquote friendship. Mark Souter, a staff member in his congressional office. It begins with a friendship, but Mark Souter in this interview said, men have to be honest, and I think it applies to women too. When there's that spark in your heart that doesn't belong there, it's the time to break off the relationship and set some distance. When there's just kind of something clicks between you and this other person of the opposite sex that you're not married to, it's time to distance yourself and don't enjoy it, nurture it, let it go on. What are some helpful safeguards against adultery? Some boundaries that can be set. Examples: not being alone with a person of the opposite sex. Keeping your office door open or having glass on your office door. I think this Scottsdale Bible Church does this, and surely our office doors at Phoenix Seminary all have a big glass window in them. So enclose the door because the conversation can't be heard, but there's accountability in that. Taking care and travel with coworkers. I'm aware of one Christian company that has a policy. If you have to travel for some reason with an opposite sex coworker, you may not get seats together on the airplane, and you have to get hotel rooms far apart from each other in the hotel, and you can't be together except in a very public place. They're just little safeguards that are taken, are appropriate. And for years, I've had a policy that I won't, you know, you go out of town, you're going to speak, and somebody picks you up at the airport. Oh, all of a sudden, it's a woman staff member from the church. I won't ride alone in a car with someone of the opposite sex. And I just haven't done that for a long time. It's to avoid temptation, but it's also to avoid the appearance of wrongdoing. And as much as we can, Margaret will travel with me. When she can't, often I'll have a male seminary student come with me just as a companion. And it's just a safeguard. It's just a protection. and there are other helpful things like that. Avoid situations that may lead to adultery or give the appearance of inappropriate behavior. Keep your way far from her. Do not go near the door of her house. Proverbs 5:8. Joseph was in the house at one point because of his work as a slave to Potiphar in Egypt. One day he went into the house to do his work. None of the men of the house was there in the house. Potiphar's wife caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. Ephesians 4:27 is another warning in general. Give no opportunity to the devil. Give no opportunity for something wrong to happen. And then beware of danger signs. I mentioned this, but Proverbs 4:23, keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. All of you know at some point or another in your life, you know what it is when it's more than just a friendship, where there's, even if it's back in high school or at some other time, when there's some kind of just a spark or an attraction to a person of the opposite sex. If you are married, that isn't appropriate to happen with anybody other than your wife. And beware of what's happening in your heart. Keep your heart with all vigilance. Number one was we should not commit adultery. That's wrong. Number two, the Bible sets an even higher standard than don't commit adultery. A desire to commit adultery is also wrong in God's sight. So it's very interesting. The last commandment of the Ten Commandments, Exodus 20:17, after God said, honor your father and your mother, and you shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness. Then the last commandment is, don't even desire those things. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You can't steal your neighbor's house, but you can't covet your neighbor's house either. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. This, the last of the Ten Commandments, shows that heart purity is required in all of them, because God desires purity in our hearts. The opposite of desiring adultery is a deep love for your wife or your husband, and a desire for positive sexual relationship within your marriage, if you're married. And also, I think, if your heart is honoring this commandment, there should be a sense of revulsion at the thought of embracing someone else in the same way. It shouldn't give a sense of joy to you, but a sense of, oh no, that's horrible. I couldn't do that. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, someone who's not your wife, or for wives, someone who's not your husband. Don't desire his handsomeness and strength in your heart. Jesus in the New Testament in Matthew 5 understood the deeper intention of the seventh commandment. Matthew 5:27-28, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. So he's quoting the Ten Commandments. But in this whole section of Matthew 5, Jesus knows that there have been misunderstandings and wrongful interpretations by the rabbis. And in this case, I think the background is such that they were thinking, well, you shall not commit adultery, but anything short of that, that's fine. And Jesus said, oh no. I say to you, and I think he's telling what God's intent was in the commandment originally, but I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And I've printed, did the Greek font come out here? Okay. Yes, Clyde's guaranteeing that it did. Okay. You skip the Greek and then the next line. Whoever looks at a woman with lustful intent, the Greek phrase is pros ta epithumesai autain. Pros, the first word, means with a view toward. With a view toward, or with the intention of. Ta epithumesai means having a strong, deep desire, passion. Autain is for her. And so, and I was again part of the discussion and part of the committee that put this translation in. I think it's a really good translation. I think it's really helpful in getting the intent of Jesus here. For the purpose of lusting for her. Or with, that's literally for the purpose of lusting for her. And to put it in readable English, we put with lustful intent. If your intent in looking at a woman is to have a lustful action or a desire for adultery or having sex with her, if that's your intent in looking at her, you've sinned. That's the point. With lustful intent. And so the key question is, why are you looking where you're looking? Is it because you're doing it so that there will be kind of a flash of pleasurable sexual arousal or sexual attraction in your mind and in your heart? Then you've stepped over the bounds. So Jesus is teaching that wrongful actions begin in the heart. Keep your heart with all vigilance. From within, Mark 7:21, from out of the heart of man come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery. James 1:14 and 15, each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desire. Then desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. But let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. So, we have to remember that God looks on the heart. 1 Samuel 16:7, the Lord said to Samuel, the Lord sees not as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. So, I talked for a minute about having your door open in your office or having a window in your door, about not riding in a car, being alone, isolated situation with someone of the opposite sex that you're not married to, unless, of course, you're single. And then, of course, then that's a different situation altogether. There is a deeper and stronger protection against adultery than even that, and even against wrongful desires. There's a deeper and stronger protection, and that is the realization that the Lord sees all our actions. And the Lord sees also what is going on in our hearts every moment of every day. So, for 2 Timothy 2:20 to 21... or 21 to 22. Therefore, I didn't read the... Let me read the couple verses before. It talks about different kinds of dishes that you have in a big house. Let me just... 2 Timothy 2, 21 to 22. Now, in a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver. That's what you put out for the big important company in the big dinner. Not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay you carry coal with, or you put out for the dog bowl or something. Some for honorable use, some for dishonorable. Now Paul is saying Christians are kind of like dishes in a big house. What kind of dish do you want to be? What kind of usefulness do you want God to have in your life, have for you? He says, If anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he'll be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from pure heart. So what is it that keeps me from looking at things I shouldn't look at on my computer, or if I travel and I'm alone in a hotel room, turning on the television and looking at movies that I shouldn't see? Partly it's the warnings against the harm that would come to my own marriage. Partly, certainly a big part, is the realization that would be horribly hurtful to Margaret. But deeper than all that, it's that the Lord would see. And maybe he would then take away blessing that he's given to my life. Maybe he would withdraw his hand of protection from my life. Maybe he would withdraw his favor on answer my prayers, giving me effectiveness in ministry. Maybe all that's going to be lost if I don't cleanse myself from what is... What did it say there? Cleanse myself from what is dishonorable. if I clutter up my heart and my mind with stuff I shouldn't be looking at or thinking about, then is God going to count me just a vessel for dishonorable use? And maybe it won't lose my salvation. I don't believe you can lose your salvation ultimately. But maybe my Christian life will become a shipwreck. As Paul says, some people have made shipwreck of their faith. Or has happened to Mark Souter. Or has happened to these other John Edwards, David Petraeus. If anyone cleanses himself from what is dishonorable, he will be a vessel for honorable use, set apart as holy, useful to the master of the house, ready for every good work. So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. So we are saved by faith alone, in Christ alone. We're not saved by good works. The Bible's very clear on that. But after we've trusted in Christ, and we've been freely forgiven, and we've just been justified by God imputing to us the righteousness of Christ, then how we act day by day has a big effect on our fellowship with God and His relationship with us. And that's what this is talking about. 2 Chronicles 16:9 also. The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless toward Him. Whose heart is blameless toward Him. Or Proverbs 5:20-21, talking about desires. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. So those are the warnings against adultery, or against the desire to commit adultery, against warning against husband desiring anybody else than your own wife that you're married to. Wives, against desiring anybody else than your own husband that you're married to. I'm going to the second part of the outline, and that is point F. And that is the specific question of pornography. I thought, I wonder, does the Bible say anything about pornography? Did people have pornography back in the time of the Bible? Well, it is interesting. Way back in the book of Ezekiel in the Old Testament, in Ezekiel 23... It's a parable of the people of God who have strayed from Him. And Ezekiel 23, in this parable, is a story of a woman, representing God's people, a woman named Oholibah. I'm going to read it. But she carried her whoring further. She saw men portrayed on the wall, the images of the Chaldeans portrayed in vermilion. So she's looking at pictures of handsome soldiers, Chaldean or Babylonian soldiers, wearing belts on their waists with flowing turbans on their heads, all of them having the appearance of officers, a likeness of Babylonians whose native land was Chaldea. When she saw them, she lusted after them. There's the desire. And sent messengers to them in Chaldea. So it's a relationship between pictures and sinful actions. She saw, she lusted, she sent messengers to them. And the Babylonians came to her into the bed of love, and they defiled her with their whoring lust. And after which she was defiled by them, she turned from them in disgust. The progression of sexual sin in this case was Oholibah saw, she lusted, she sent for, and then she committed adultery. Purity of heart requires us to discipline our eyes with what we look at. Job, in protesting his innocence before God, that he is not aware of any sin that would lead to this tragic situation that has happened to him, he said, look, I've made a covenant with my eyes. I think he means a covenant not to look or gaze at or long for by looking at any wrongful things. I've made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? I think that implies in a lustful way. What would be my portion from God above and my heritage from the Almighty on high? It seems to me quite clear that looking at pornography violates Jesus' command in Matthew 5, 27 to 28. You've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And surely that is looking at a woman with lustful intent, looking at pornography. Pornography is wrong because it attracts your affections and desires outside your marriage and away from your wife or your husband. I'm speaking of husband and wife here, and I'm usually using the man as the example, but it also would apply to a woman. So my affections and my sexual desires should be directed toward Margaret. and they are, let me tell you. Okay. But if I look at pornography, all of a sudden, instead of those desires being directed toward Margaret, they're attracted someplace else, outside of the marriage, toward a picture, toward another woman. And they're taking those desires, that affection that I should have and that desire, it's turning them in another direction, away from where it should be directed. Or for a woman to do that, it's attracting your desires and affections outside your marriage, away from your husband. Or if you're single, it's still, you're not going to marry that person you're looking at the picture of. It's attracting your desires in a wrongful direction away from the person you will marry. And it then for me to do that would be to rob Margaret of affection that should be hers. And it would turn my heart from her and from desiring her. And when this happens in any marriage, that looking at pornography, attracting desires away from your marriage, it will hinder your sexual relationship within marriage. And let me tell you, I remember especially one student a number of years ago saying to me, seminary student, just talking to me in my office, and he said, Wayne, though I've been married 7 or 8 or 9 years, I still can't get out of my mind those pornographic images that I looked at before I was married. And he said, it's a real detriment, a real harm to our marriage. Memories that last for a long time. And pornography often leads to false expectations and even wrongful expectations and ideas within the sexual relationship within marriage. I'm going to say this to men because Margaret has mentioned this to me, and other people have mentioned that this often happens. If you, as a man, are looking at pornography, your wife or your girlfriend will instinctively sense some uncleanness, some impurity in your relationship, even if she does not discover any facts. Now, I think that God has given to women just an instinctive sense of when something is wrong in this area, and they pick up on it. And sometimes other women besides your wife or your girlfriend will sense this impurity too. So if a man has been looking at pornography, there's something that a woman will sense in relating to him that senses she will sense uncleanness or impurity. And then, of course, if a wife does discover factual proof, it will be devastating to her. And more than once, Margaret and I have had the experience of a woman that we know, especially a few years ago, I remember, where a woman that we know just came to us, she needed to talk to us, she just sat on our couch and wept bitterly because of discovering that her husband had been involved in pornography. Just a deep sense of betrayal. Number 5, pornography is a trap that draws people deeper and deeper and never satisfies. It's the deception of the enemy to destroy us. And in my politics book, 240 to 241, I quote some expert testimony from Dr. Victor Klein, who has studied this a lot. And he said, when someone looks at pornography, it's a progression from initial attraction to pornography, and then after a while, that doesn't really, well, it isn't going to satisfy because it's a mirage, it's a deception. It's something that Satan puts out there to try to say, oh, this is going to give you fulfillment, but it doesn't. And so then the person is attracted to worse and worse pornography, and then eventually into visiting prostitutes, and ultimately into violent crimes of rape and murder. And it happens again and again. It's a trap that draws people deeper and deeper and never satisfies. And it leads to other sins. I just mentioned that. Visiting prostitutes, rape, and other violence against women, because it dehumanizes women and fails to respect them and treat them as persons made in God's image and valuable in His eyes. Now, what happens is when a man becomes involved in pornography or a woman, let me just repeat that, but I'm using a man for an example here. There are excuses and rationalizations. It's not a woman I'm looking at, it's only a picture. Well, it's a picture of a real woman. Be honest, I would say to that person. You are looking at that picture with the purpose of arousing sexual desire. You look because you enjoy having that desire aroused. And anyone who looks at pornography today is seeing 100 times more detail than what men could see in Jesus' day when looking at women with long Near Eastern robes. Well, I'm just curious. I'm not really lusting after those pictures, those people, those women in the pictures. And my question is then, is there a sexual arousal that happens when you look? Then you are lusting. You're looking for the purpose of being aroused sexually. And that's what Jesus says. If you look with lustful intent, that is with the intention of having that brief, pleasurable sensation, then you're lusting, and Jesus says you're committing adultery in your heart day after day. Well, it's not really bad stuff I'm looking at. It's just the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue or something. But again, be honest. If you're looking with the purpose of having your sexual desires aroused, you're committing adultery in your heart. Now, the statistics that we read on pornography are sobering because it's so prolific in our culture today. The great damage of pornography. A woman who finds out feels devastated by this. I already mentioned that, but the damage to a marriage can take months or even years to repair in some cases. One statistic that I read 10 years ago said as many as 2 million people in the United States, nearly 1% of the population, were addicted to some kind of pornography. That was the Washington Times Weekly Edition, November 10th to 16th, page 2003, page 1. The vast majority are men, but some significant percentage are women. But another estimate is that 6 to 8% of the population is addicted to pornography. As I mentioned in my politics book, page 241. In any case, whatever the numbers are, there's a tremendous loss, first in the lives of the people who are looking at the pornography, because it will have a destructive effect on any sexual relationship in the present or future within marriage. It will often lead to other sins, will lead to a sense of alienation from God, an unwillingness to seek God because of secret guilt. And so I think that the existence of pornography behind closed doors is a time bomb ticking away in our nation, or a cancer eating away at its soul. And you think of kids in junior high or high school age now looking at pornography and the damage that is going to come to their marriage relationships in the future. I think we have no idea of what it's doing. Looking at pornography is often an addiction that cannot be overcome without help from someone else. And I put 2 phone numbers here. In the United States, I realize that there are people outside the United States listening to this, and I don't have local information for other countries, but here in the United States anyway, and maybe they will help with other countries too. Focus on the Family will refer a person to a local counselor, and there's a number there, 719-531-3400. There's also something called National Coalition for Protection of Children and Families, 1-800-583-2964, and they will get you involved with some local counselor. Who are my counseling people here? Don, Mary Jane, do you know? And Rick, do you know? Are those still good references? This outline's from a number of years ago. Go ahead, there's a mic, Don.
There are two here in town. Seven Places is Dustin Daniels' ministry, and Dustin has a radio program on KPXQ, I believe. It's sevenplaces.org.
Okay.
And Scottsdale Bible has a ministry on sexual issues that's run by David Walther over at the Counseling Center.
Okay, good. Thank you, Don. Good. But it's an area where, Don, the first step is admitting that you need help. But it often can become an addiction that needs help from someone else. Okay.
Take an extra 4 minutes.
Okay. I'm on good schedule, though, Jack, aren't I?
No, you'll be off 5 minutes, but go ahead.
Okay. Okay, good. Good. I'm going to go quickly over number 10, the legal situation in the United States. Much of the blame for allowing the flood of pornography in our nation, I think, belongs to the United States Supreme Court because they interpreted the First Amendment freedom of speech and freedom of press rights far too broadly. The purpose of the First Amendment was primarily to protect political speech, but pornography is surely not political speech, criticizing one political party or another. But, and I did have a, when I wrote this section in my politics book, I did call and talk for a time to Alan Sears, the head of Alliance Defending Freedom. Alan, many years ago, was a federal prosecutor for a time, but then he was the executive director of the Attorney General's Commission on Pornography. President Reagan, and then his attorney, with the help of his attorney general Ed Meese. Ed Meese set up this national pornography commission to study the problem of pornography in the United States and suggest solutions. And Alan was actually the director of that commission. James Dobson was a member of it. He was part of it. But he tells me, and this was from a conversation maybe 3 years ago, that even though we have these Supreme Court rulings that allow a lot of things to be published in the United States that as I mentioned, are pornographic, Alan said, adequate legal means still exist if there's a willingness of prosecutors to prosecute at the national, state, and local level. And there were a couple of standards. I mentioned Roth v. United States, 1957, and Miller v. California, 1973, where there were some legal standards put out. But this Attorney General's Commission on Pornography, later Alan Sears was interviewed in a public article, and in that article he gave, I think, a very useful definition of what pornography is. It's sexually explicit material designed primarily for arousal. And he also said to me that in the United States, yes, we need prosecutions to be brought by local and national prosecutors because they can win. And yet the main focus should be on visual images, photos and videos, not on literature where it's harder to prove that it doesn't have literary merit. But the prosecutions haven't been enough. Under President Reagan with Ed Meese and then first President Bush, there were about 50 major federal prosecutions and convictions, and there was a major curtailing of the U.S. pornography industry, including a man that was the primary purveyor of the pornography in the United States. He went to prison. Under President Clinton, 1993 to 2001, zero or almost zero federal prosecutions of pornography, and the industry, pornography industry flourished. Under second President Bush, 2001 to 2009, there were more federal prosecutions, not as many as under Reagan, but the task was nearly overwhelming. And then 2009 to the present, under President Obama, back to almost zero prosecutions. So it requires will on the part of the leadership in Washington. Things to do to protect your home and community: an internet filter on your computer, especially for children. And I could say one thing that I always work with my study door open at home, and Margaret at any minute can come around the hall, around the corner of the hallway, which is way down the hallway, and immediately see what I'm looking at my computer 24 hours a day or night. It's just a little accountability thing. Promote filters at your local library. Run for the library board if you want to. Community pressure and aggressive prosecution can drive out stores that sell the worst pornography. And there have been some successful boycotts by the American Family Association and others of stores that sell a lot of pornography. So there's some things we can do. I wish more could be done. Okay. Have some time for questions or comments. You know what? Kathy, do you want to say something about what's happened in Arizona or what the situation is? And I didn't warn you in advance, but does CAP do anything in this area?
Yes, we do. We try to. We have done several laws through the years. We did one of the laws that we were able to get through last year has stricter controls on protecting minors from being able to, for example, in the public library, a minor walks by a computer and it may be an adult using the computer, but something flashes up. So the public libraries are required to do something to protect minors from accessing pornography at the local library.
Yep.
So there are a number, but it's hard. I mean, we did one of the key laws we did was to try to close debt. Well, it's just hard. I mean, because we haven't, the Supreme Court has really tied our hands on what we can do. We've been able to do some things like not have the movie tax credit renewed because that was bringing in some questionable movies. So trying to protect from Arizona subsidizing movies that are pornographic. There's one of the best resources in Arizona is Arizona Family Council. Is largely centered in the LDS community, but it's one of their chief goals is to address the pornography issue. Okay. There's a pornography harms website, but it's just the bottom line, it's very difficult to do anything about it. To try to restrict the adult businesses that promote, of course, pornography so much, we were able to get a bill through to close the overnight hours, and then a court overturned that law, so it's just been one story after the other.
Courts. Okay. Thanks, Kathy. Okay. Others, yes. I forgot your name.
Hi, my name is Paul. I just wanted to know, is it appropriate to have a business partner of the opposite sex?
Oh, I'm going to say yes, but a lot of precautions have to be taken. And I don't think you should ever be alone together. I don't want to make rules where the Bible doesn't make rules. I just want to say there are dangers. So, but yeah, there are men and women in the work world. Rick?
When we took Dr. Steve Tracy's class, Biblical Sexuality, one of the things we had to do was write down our plan. How do we plan not to have an affair?
Okay.
And that's what I would recommend. Be careful if you go on business trips. Same thing like you're saying, windows open.
Yeah.
And the other thing is we had to do 100 consequences, possible consequences, if we had an affair. And I thought, 100? And I started, losing respect, losing, possible STDs, child, all this. I got to 105, and it was that my wife would shoot me with her Ruger Recaro 44 Magnum. And the other thing is that our minds are like computers, and men are visually stimulated. That's why God made us, to be stimulated towards our wives.
Yep.
Women are emotionally stimulated.
Yep.
So all the guys that I counseled with pornography issues, they can remember the first time they ever saw pornography.
Yep.
They can recount that first time.
Yep.
So flee from temptation.
Yeah.
Have a plan ahead of time. Invariably, when I'm counseling pastors even that have had affairs, I said, what happened? They go, I don't know. It just happened. They did not have a plan.
Yeah. And Rick, thank you for that. You just think of that pastor of that 15,000 member church in Indiana. He didn't realize the 100 consequences that are going to be happening, but okay. Bill?
The side issue, for about 15 years before I retired, I was head of our company's computer systems, information, yep. et cetera. We had about 900 employees. A lot of those were in the field as service and salespeople. The owner and his family were Christians. They would not allow pornography on anybody's computer.
Mm.
The only way you can tell if they had pornography was to have somebody look at their
yep.
computers.
Yep.
This created a problem in that so many people had it outside the company. They were pretty much unrestricted.
Yep.
That my guys were complaining. They have to be the watchdogs, and it was a very bad situation for them to have to go in and see where they went and view
yep.
and report back.
Yep.
We found some ways around that, but it was rather sticky.
Good company policy, though.
And if anyone in the company sent pornography or yep. links to it,
yep.
they were fired
yep.
instantly.
Yep.
Now, there's one thing most people don't know is that in Windows, there's a file in the computer which is invisible to you, and you can't delete it, get rid of it, and all that, but it records everywhere that user goes on the web. And it doesn't take a lot of data to record 4 years of where you went, you
yep.
know, and your breadcrumbs.
Yep.
And that tells a big story in itself.
Good. Thank you, Bill. Wesley?
Let me bring this home in a broader picture. Joe Bubar in the music department here, many of you know him. He's been here a long time. His father is pastor of Grace Bible Church in Rio Grande, California. And Joe's out in California. I lived out there for a total of 5 years. 2 years right after my wife committed suicide, I lived in sin. I did things I never thought I'd do in the California environment. I went back for 3 more to fix what I'd messed up with a 5-year intermission there. During that period of time, a registered sex offender who had been out of prison for 15 years became one of my best friends. He ran the Pure Desire program for recovery from sexual addiction. And in California, they have a special
okay.
designation for sex addiction therapists.
Okay, thank you, Wesley.
They say it takes at least 5 years, much more difficult than alcohol, 5 years in a program to get out of
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you. Rosemary, it is Rosemary. Okay, and then I saw some two in back here. Oh, man, we've got a lot of hands. All right, we have some time, though.
I just would like to see you put women into this, because I think, you know, our young girls and their mothers and everyone today, the way they dress, the way they act,
mm-hmm.
sometimes I don't think they even realize
no.
what the repercussions can be.
I think you're right. Yeah. And men and women are just different. And I think probably women don't as readily sense how men are visually stimulated, and a woman who dresses in a provocative way is creating a real difficulty for any men around her. And yeah, thanks, Rosemary. Okay, in the back, what's your name?
My name is Sherry, and I was the codependent of a sex addict in recovery in a 12-step program for years. And we got help from the best help I got was from Doug Weiss. He's a Christian, W-E-I-S-S.
Okay.
Heart Counseling.
Okay.
I believe he's in Texas. But he did the best thing on how a young boy who sees pornography begins to substitute. He can't get his hands on drugs or pills, but he can, you know,
yeah.
find another.
Yeah.
And
okay.
it's, you know, they probably do this on Focus on the Family, but how the neural pathway in the brain, first it's like a pathway, then a highway, then a freeway.
Okay.
And it's permanently damaging. So.
Okay. Thank you. Boy, sobering. Neville.
The incidence of pornography usage is staggering. It is at least 60 to 70% of men on a monthly basis, and actually the fastest growing group that are using pornography are actually women. And the reason is because many men have already been exposed, but women are becoming more as society is unraveling in these things. I just want to encourage men, this is not something that you are going to overcome on your own. Absolutely. I know no man that's overcome that on his own. It is definitely where you need to be in iron sharpened iron, where you can be with men that will encourage you, hold you accountable, love you through this. There are programs, as we've mentioned a couple, but I will tell you the first thing I would suggest is get into accountable relationship at this local men's ministry that we have here, which I can assure you is very powerful. So I would strongly encourage men that have any issues in that regard to be in that fellowship.
Thank you, Neville. How does someone get in touch?
Simply to show up on Tuesday evenings at men's ministry at the venue.
Oh,
and we begin at 6:30.
Just for the general men's ministry.
That's correct. But Wayne, once they're in there, then they will gravitate towards the groups that will assist.
Thank you, Neville. Oh, more. Don.
Just to confirm what Neville was saying, in 2008, Christianity Today published an article that said 70% of American men ages 18 to 34 view internet pornography once a month.
70%.
He goes on to say that one evangelical pastor was skeptical of those findings. And so he surveyed his own congregation and found that 60% of those within the church had done so within the last year, and 25% of those in his church in the last 30 days.
Wow. Okay, Don. I'll tell you, this is really sobering, the comments that I'm hearing. Very sobering. Kathy?
Just two quick points. First, women increase use of pornography is because of the internet. I've seen the studies on these where women can do it in secret because they can go on the internet, get in chat rooms, that they're lonely at night, they can spend hours online. That has been one thing that has led to increased use of pornography among women. The other thing, when Wayne was talking about companies and ministries having policies on not riding with someone of the opposite sex, traveling with someone of the opposite sex, when you bring up the modesty issue, we also need to make sure that our ministries and our companies also have policies on modesty, and that we are addressing modesty issues in the workplace and in our churches. And at Center for Arizona Policy, I bring our women in. I have some instructions on modesty. We're not doing enough about modesty within Christian circles on an ongoing basis.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. I'll tell you, I'm hearing a whole lot of things in the comments, but one thing I'm hearing is that increasingly Christian individuals and Christian companies are going to be looking a lot different from secular companies and secular individuals and how people conduct themselves. Okay, another one here. I forgot your name.
My name's Kent.
Yes, Kent.
And my question is, why is it that adultery was the only grounds for divorce?
That is next week, and that's a transition to next week's class, which I really am thankful for. Come back. I think there's another ground that Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7:15, is desertion that cannot be reconciled or remedied. So, two. I'm kind of joking. I think because it so seriously defiles the marriage relationship. So seriously defiles the marriage relationship. I think that's the point. Okay.
Lord Jesus, you lived among us as a man. You understand our struggles and our weaknesses. In fact, your word says you were tempted in every way as we are, yet without sin. So that means, Lord, that you were tempted to have wrongful thoughts and wrongful desires. You were tempted to have your eyes go the wrong direction where they should not. But you overcame those temptations. Lord, help each of us, men and women, to be faithful to you in our actions. And then, what is even harder, Lord, in our minds and in our hearts, we pray that you would cleanse and purify our minds and hearts from anything unclean, and that you would give us a delight in righteousness and in obedience to you, even in our heart, and that we would see the excellence of your moral commands. And Lord, that you would protect us from falling in this area of adultery or this area of pornography. Protect each person here, each person listening to this tape later. Lord, give power and protection and wise counsel and wise friends and accountability and honesty and a desire to seek you and have lives that are pure and hearts that are pure before you. Help us, Lord. Forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness, as you promise. Amen.